Welcome back, movie lovers. I'm Josh.
I'm Chris.
And with our powers combined, we are
Garner Brothers Movie Lovers.
Well, we're back. Again, you can't get rid of us. We keep coming back. We're like bed bugs. We've gone to go see another movie, so we've come back to the internet. The movie we've gone to see today is Dune Part 2, sequel to Dune the First Dune. Our protagonist, Paul Atreides, basically, his family was killed. The planet they were supposed to watch over and mine spice from was overtaken from the skinhead albinos. Now, he lives in the desert. Oh my gosh. Anyway, and now he's Desert Jesus. And that's where we're left off in this movie, and they kind of start the rebellion against the skinhead albinos, who happen to use, like, 1920s scuba diving gear in space for some reason. Did you notice, like, their helmets are connected to their elbows? It's no wonder all these ninja mummies in the desert are able to kill them so easily with their little knives. It's hard to fight with your big sword when your elbows don't move because they're connected to your helmet. Yeah! Anyways.
I wasn't expecting to laugh so much during your breakdown of the plot.
I'm sorry. I think I don't get Dune. I think that I didn't take enough ayahuasca before watching Dune, and it's just gone right past me. Next time, I will need some sort of shaman to help me understand what the heck is going on when I watch these movies, because they're just a lot. These movies are a lot. We'll get into this.
They are a lot.
Who's in this movie?
So this film is directed by Denis Villeneuve, who also helped write it. It stars Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Stellan Skarsgård, and it has small parts for Lea Seydoux and Anya Taylor-Joy.
Wow, man. That cast. What a right? spectacular cast. I mean, like, I saw it and they were in it, but I guess they were all so good I forgot they were them. Except for Christopher Walken, who's always
Christopher Walken.
But I mean, other than that, everyone really bleeds into their roles super well.
I agree.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah. He's great.
Unrecognizable in this movie.
So is Austin Butler. Man.
Yeah.
He is not like any role he's played before. I also want to give a shout out to the cinematographer, Greg Fraser. This movie is stunning to look at. Every scene, it's like Lord of the Rings. Like, every scene just looks incredible. Every shot, the way it's all framed, my goodness. There are just, like, there's more shots than I could possibly name that I was just, like, in awe of what I was looking at. This movie is incredible to look at. And it has a score by Hans Zimmer.
Oh, that makes sense. It was pretty obnoxious.
I don't like this score. I know there's a lot of people who've said good things about this music, but...
Well, I think that's just because Hans Zimmer's, he's the world's favorite soundtrack person.
Yeah.
But this is mostly just deep rumbling noises that made me kind of try to pop my ears a couple of times. Like, is there something wrong? What's going on with my hearing?
Yeah.
No, it's just the beautiful soundtrack.
It's
Dune 2.
It is not beautiful, but the story is not beautiful. I don't know. The music is kind of grating and unnerving, and so is the film. So I guess that works, yep. Right? Although this film was able to slow down a lot and, like, do a lot more character development and storytelling than the first film did, I think. And I could have benefited from some, I don't know, some different music, but this is the one they wanted, I guess. So, okay.
Yeah, I feel like the first movie, there was a lot of heavy lifting in the world building area.
Yeah.
And in this movie, there was none of that. And you would do well to rewatch the first one.
Oh, definitely.
Before you go see this
one. I agree.
Because I did not. And they are not going to remind you
of anything.
And there's a lot of little things they taught you about in the first one. You'll remember some of them, but like, I forgot about the spooky voices that can control people.
The voice.
So when people started going, "Rawr," I was like, why did Zendaya just do that thing she was refusing to do after that lady barked at her? And then I was like, is that a thing that happened in the... I think that might have been a thing. I think barking is like a power. I think that the bird cage hat wearing evil witches can bark at people to control them. Yeah, that's right. That's the lore of Dune.
You know, I did watch the original before we went and saw this one, and I think I was a lot less confused than you were, so definitely watch Dune 1 again if you don't remember it very well.
I was pulled out of the movie a lot being distracted.
See, I was never pulled out of the movie. I was thoroughly engrossed from minute one. This movie picks up exactly where the last one left off, and it will not hold your hand at all.
Yeah, so make sure you do that, because even if you do, you're still going to come out of this movie and go, whoa, that was a lot.
They're a lot.
You're gonna be just absolutely overwhelmed with the Dune-ness of it all. I posted that silly video of me talking about it, and afterwards one of the people who watched the video was like, I don't know if I should see this based on what you said. Like, are you endorsing this movie or not? And I was like, the highs are really high and the lows are really low. The moment when he rides the worm for the first time is spectacular.
It really is.
It is absolutely stunning. Oh my gosh, I can't properly express to you the gripping sensations you're having in that moment as it's tipping into the sand and you're all disoriented from everything that's going on. Holy cow. And the way that they're able to tactically take down these giant dystopian mining machines, it is so intense and it is really interesting to watch. And the battle at the end is so epic and grand and a scale that I haven't seen in theaters in a very long time.
Maybe ever.
Maybe ever. Yeah. It is really fantastic. Those moments that are big are really, I mean, you're riding high in those moments. And you're equally riding low in the low moments on this movie. There are so many gross, sadistic, freaky bad guys in this movie.
Yeah, they are.
And you are just sitting in your seat and you're like, man, that guy is morbidly obese from eating people. They're so messed up.
It's gross. Ugh. Yeah. The whole Harkonnen, the entire world that they live in, it's a very different feel. You spend so much time on Arrakis at the beginning and you start to feel really comfortable there and all the tones are warm and, you know, you're rooting for them. And then you go to the Harkonnen world where they have a black sun, which ends up making the entire world just look black and white. And it was filmed in infrared, apparently, which even shows you veins underneath their skin and their eyes kind of look crazy. And the whole gladiator scene there, at one point, Krista leaned over to me and said, this doesn't even feel like the same movie. It doesn't. It's brilliant. He gives that world a super different feel. It feels jarring when you go to their world. And it just, that whole world just feels so off, feels so gross and so wrong. And then when you go back to the desert, you're like, ah, the desert.
I will say, without making any spoilers, that there's some very interesting choices made throughout this movie, particularly with Zendaya's character.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm most interested in the future of Zendaya's character than anyone else at this point. Do you know how many movies they're planning on making? Because there's a lot of books.
There are. There are six that were written by Frank Herbert, and then there are like 20 or something that were written by his son and somebody else after he died. So I think Villeneuve is only going to make this two-parter of the first book, and then I think he wants to make a third film based on the second book. And then he has said he doesn't really have any interest in adapting the rest of the books. There may be more after that if somebody else takes over.
They get insane. Apparently, Timothée Chalamet's character becomes a giant worm at some point. So.
No, that's his son.
That's his son? Okay.
Yes.
Whatever.
But you're right. Yeah.
I think it even weirder. I mean, it's weird already, but like, anyway.
It's just such a spectacle. I saw it in IMAX on just an enormous screen with incredible sound, and it's just an experience. And I can't imagine a bigger cinematic experience happening to me this year than this film, right? It's a ride. I was thoroughly engrossed in the film the entire time. One time in the middle, I started thinking, this is maybe a little long, but most of the time I was just in it.
It is very, very slow paced. Even some of the action moments of the movie, my adrenaline was delayed somehow, because the movie brings you into this weird trance. Somehow, like, the pace of this movie is, like, hypnotic or something. This movie is so bizarre. It's such a weird movie. I had a friend who, when we walked out of the movie, he was like, I can't tell if this is, like, a masterpiece or if I'm getting trolled.
I'm kind of surprised by that reaction. Like, I think most people are really going to like this film.
Definitely the critical consensus for this movie will be that this is the greatest movie ever made in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
I think the audience score is going to be
lower.
I think there would be a lot of people who would go into this movie and just be like, that was just too much.
So here's what I think is so interesting about this. This is a huge blockbuster movie, right? This is not the kind of film you usually go and see that's a blockbuster. Usually blockbusters are popcorn movies. This is not a popcorn movie.
No.
This is a really serious film. It has some very deep philosophical and psychological conflicts. It has some excellent action, some just jaw-dropping cinematography, but it's not an easy film. And so I think a lot of people are gonna, at the end of it, be like, did I like that? Because it's not your normal huge movie.
And I think a lot of people don't ask themselves that question when they walk out of a movie. I think a lot of people just have like a gut instinctual feeling. If the hero doesn't win and gets the girl and has the big kiss at the end and walks away in the sunset and Vin Diesel says, it's all about family at the end of the movie, then they're not happy.
Those people are not going to be happy with this.
They will hate this movie. In a general sense, is there anything else you want to talk about with this movie that we haven't covered?
No, I think it just boils down to this is a visual and auditory spectacle. It is incredibly well made and acted, and it is not easy. Like, the story is hard.
But there are a lot of interesting things about this movie. Just don't expect, like Chris said, a basic blockbuster movie. If you ever see a Denis Villeneuve movie, it will never be a basic movie. It will always be a thought-provoking, weird, interesting, hard movie. His movies are kind of hard.
You're right. His movies are different.
Let's rate it, I guess, and then we'll talk spoilers. So, it's time for Good, Fine, Bad.
Good!
Fine.
Good. Bad.
Fine.
That's bad.
That's bad. That's bad. That's bad.
Everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Chris, good, fine, bad.
I think the movie is good, but you have to go into it with your eyes open to what you're about to watch.
Sure. And maybe because I didn't do my homework and I didn't see the first movie, I'm feeling pretty fine about this movie. And I think everyone's gonna destroy me for saying that, because how dare I?
One more like general thought about this film. I think the reason it's hard to like is that it's not Star Wars. We want our big spectacle sci-fi movies to be fun and have heroes that are easy to root for.
You want a good person in the movie. You want one. You want one person you can be like, that's a good guy. And this movie kind of has that for half the movie. Kind of.
It's a hard world. Dune is like Star Wars without the fun. Everybody's bad. everyone is evil. It's really, really serious and dark.
That's fine or whatever. Maybe this is just me, but Dune is like, I'm going to create this story. It's going to be this crazy world, all these intricacies. It's just going to make everyone kind of feel gross and want to go home and curl up in a ball and cry in the corner of their room naked and pour some vinegar on them and then roll around in the mud. That's what I want.
I see your point. However, this film is based on a book, and it's true to the spirit of that book.
Okay, let's talk spoilers. Timothée Chalamet doesn't even believe that he's Desert Jesus. Neither do half the desert mice. But then the desert mice are like, well, he can ride a big worm pretty good. He might be Desert Jesus. And then when Christopher Walken bows down to him, and then everyone bows down to him, Zendaya, the one person he cares and respects the most, is the only one who doesn't believe in him anymore. Do you think Timothée Chalamet really believes it all, or do you think he's leaning into it to get things done?
It's an interesting question. So that juice that he drinks, I forget what it's called, but it's like the waters of life or something like that. When he drinks them, it enables you to take upon yourself the collective memories, all of these past people.
The birdcage hat-wearing evil witches.
Yeah, maybe even others too. I don't know, but
I think it's just the other people who drink the blue juice. That's my understanding. Could be wrong.
I don't know. But it's an interesting thing because he doesn't believe that he is that. Like, he knows that the Bene Gesserit have been planting these messiah myths among the Fremen for hundreds of years, and they've been doing it to prepare them for him. And so he knows that it's all a setup. But then when he drinks the stuff, he totally changes. And I think he also says that, like, so he has some kind of gift of prescience. He's had it from the first film, right? He has these dreams of the future. He sees visions. Apparently, he can see the future much more clearly after he drinks that stuff. It doesn't, like, say this explicitly, but I think what happened was, before he drank that, he knew that if he did go down there and drink that, billions of people would die. And after he drank that, he realized the alternative is worse, that there's something worse in the future that will happen if he doesn't take this role. And so he becomes a tyrant to try to prevent even more suffering than he is going to end up causing. In the end, it's a big philosophical, moral, ethical quandary. Do the ends justify the means? And I think that's what he's presented with. I think in the end, he realizes, I have to be this messiah figure and lead these people and do this thing now.
Yeah, he doesn't really believe it, but he realizes that
he has to do it,
which is interesting, because for a long time after he took the blue juice, I thought it was like he really thought it was real after that. And then there was that moment when they walk into the royal chambers or whatever, and he turns to Zendaya and he says, I'll always love you as long as I breathe. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, that's the old Timothée Chalamet. And then I started to wonder, he's pretending. He's going to marry this lady just for political purposes.
Yeah.
It's all a facade. It's all fake. He doesn't really believe it all. He's doing it all out of necessity. I didn't know that for sure until that moment. And all of a sudden, I questioned everything. I was kind of annoyed with the fight between Desert Jesus and Voldemort Elvis. It was kind of awesome until the finale. The final part of the fight, I think what happens is Timothée Chalamet, while he's trying to stop himself from getting stabbed in the shoulder, he uses the knife that's in his side to stab into Voldemort Elvis.
I think that's what happened, but they didn't do a great job.
They don't show it. I thought that was really poorly done.
You have to figure it out after the fact. I thought that fight was really gripping.
It was. Everything was awesome until that moment, and then I was like, why would you do it that way? There's a part where they drink the blue worm juice and they find out that they're related to
the Harkonnens. Yeah.
And then he says this thing. They say, I can see all these different possible futures. And there's so many different ways that this can go wrong. But there is one way where Iron Man can save us all. There is one way where this can work out. And then immediately after that, he says, we'll be Harkonnens, and that's how we'll survive. And I was like, by being the bad guys? That's how you'll survive? By being the bad guys? No, don't do that. Stop.
It's just really hard. Everything that happens in the first half of the movie, you're rooting for Paul Atreides and the Fremen. You know this movie's building to climax between them fighting the Harkonnen. And so you're rooting for him the whole time. And then at the end, this guy you've been rooting for, you're now like, wait, should I be rooting for him? It's hard to, when the person you've been rooting for suddenly becomes a megalomaniacal tyrant. And then you're like, oh.
Yeah. And I felt this way about the end of the first one too. Where at the end of the first one, I was like, well, I think I'll know better about how I feel about this movie after I see the second
one. That's how I felt.
And after seeing this one, I was like, I think I'll know better about how I feel about this movie.
After you see the third
after
one.
After I see the third one.
Yeah. I do have to say that I do feel better about this movie than I did about the first one. I feel like the first movie had so much setup to do, and it had to do it so quickly. That movie felt really rushed. It felt like a movie that was entirely set up, and it kind of is. But because of everything that movie set up, I felt like this movie could really slow down and take its time on some of the character arcs. And I do think the relationship between Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya is the most interesting part of the film. And the fact that she questions the whole mythology that's been built up, and Javier Bardem totally buys into it. So you get those two sides of that coin kind of fighting back and forth.
That is an interesting choice.
This goes back to what Villeneuve was saying in one of the interviews that I was watching. He said he made some changes to the end of this. The fact that the other houses don't accept him and that Zendaya's character doesn't accept him, none of that's in the book. In the book, at the end, he becomes the new emperor. Zendaya stays by his side because she's like all in. And it doesn't say anything about the other houses rejecting him or anything. So they win. They beat the bad guys. The problem that Frank Herbert, the author of the book, had was that people read it and thought that Paul Atreides was a hero. And his whole point in writing the book was to make it a message about how power corrupts and how tyranny's not okay and the dangers of false messiahs and stuff like that. And that's why he wrote Dune Messiah, the sequel book, to show everybody, like, no, that wasn't the point of the story. The point is that power is always bad.
I think we're done. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks very much. Bye.
Pew, pew, pew.